Okay, so now we're on to the old glyphosate thing. Boy, my goodness. What are we going to do there?
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Okay, here we go. Hour number two of our little show, OneRadioNetwork.com, Patrick Timpone. We're going to talk with a gentleman who, his son demonstrated autistic behavior as a baby, and he wanted to get to the bottom of it and figure out how to help him get rid of that, and he did, and he's been researching it from different ways to heal and things with various products that he's created. It's pretty really cool stuff, a lot of fermentation in there and probiotics and different, well, you'll hear about it tomorrow. Wayne Blakely, quite a story. He's been doing it for about 25 years. That'll be tomorrow. Next up is Carrie Gillum. She is an investigative journalist, been around for a long time. 17 years senior correspondence with Reuters. You've heard about them. And she's her specialty is biotech, crop technology. And with the rise of the pesticides and food production system, it's a big deal now. She's won several industry awards for her work and been recognized as one of the top journalists in the country covering food and agriculture. She's a frequent commentator. You've probably seen her on some TV shows and know who she was. Speaks at conferences all over the world. Her latest book is called Whitewash, Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and Corruption of Science. It was released in 2017, and I believe she's up there in Kansas. Carrie Gillum, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you just fine, Carrie Gillum.
Great. Great.
You up there with Dorothy in Kansas, huh? My goodness.
No place like home.
No place like home. So you've been at this. Were you aware of the whole glyphosate thing at the very beginning, the GMO stuff, Carrie Gillum?
Well, I was covering the banking industry in the 1990s when Reuters asked me to move to Kansas City and start covering food and agriculture and, you know, to be near the farmers. And so, no, at that point, I didn't really know anything about GMOs or glyphosate or Roundup or Monsanto. But it became my job, of course, very quickly to learn everything I could and start really writing and researching about the company and its products and profit streams and rivals. So that's what I've been doing since 1998.
And when did they start genetically modifying and coupling it up with the Roundup product? Do you know when that was?
Yeah, that was in the mid-1990s. That was, you know, really why I was assigned to take on the beat, because it was revolutionizing agriculture, row crop agriculture, you know, in the Midwest, soybeans and corn that were being brought into the marketplace that Monsanto had designed specifically to tolerate being sprayed with glyphosate, with its Roundup. And the reason they did that was because glyphosate, the patent they had was about to expire. It was going to expire in the year 2000, and they wanted a way to hold on to that market share. So they introduced these GMO crops that encouraged farmers to use Roundup, and they called it the Roundup Ready system. You know, Roundup Ready soybeans, buy the seed, spray it with Roundup, and Monsanto, you know, it was a brilliant strategy, and farmers loved it.
So the selling of Roundup was sold to the farmers to keep the bugs away?
No. Roundup is an herbicide. It kills weeds.
Kills weeds.
Right. And the main ingredient is glyphosate. You know, the weed killing is the weed killing active ingredient there.
And have they had to use more and more of this stuff as they?
Yeah.
Does it build up a tolerance to it?
So what happened, the first glyphosate was introduced by Monsanto in the 1970s, around 1974, and farmers used it, you know, and it's used by homeowners and, you know, community neighborhoods, golf course operators, cities use it on parks and playgrounds. And everybody was using it sort of in a reasonable manner, it seemed, until the 90s when they rolled out these crops that encouraged, you know, to be sprayed directly over it. And weed scientists said, this is going to be a problem. You're going to develop resistance really quick.
The weeds will figure it out.
The weeds will develop resistance. And so they did, of course. And so then farmers use more and more. And it's become this just pesticide, this race to the bottom where we were using about 40 million pounds of Roundup a year in the U.S. in the 90s. And we're now using close to 300 million pounds a year.
Whoa. 300 in the United States?
In the United States. And what that's doing is it's leaving residues in our foods, of course. And that's why we now commonly find this weed killer in our urine. It's pervasive. It's ubiquitous in the environment now.
Wow. So we've also heard that glyphosate per se, I guess separate. Glyphosate is also separate from Roundup in some ways, right? I mean, you could actually buy glyphosate and be not necessarily buying Roundup.
Right. Glyphosate is the active ingredient.
Right.
It's the it's what Monsanto patented. And Monsanto uses it in a number of branded products like Roundup and others. But now that the patent is gone, other companies use it too. There are generic versions. There are hundreds of products that contain glyphosate sold around the world.
And we've been hearing that glyphosates are being used now on non-GMO products. They spray to make it easier to harvest, and that's true, right?
Yeah, I mean, glyphosate, I did an article not too long ago that said not just for corn and soy, because a lot of people have that impression, I guess. But, I mean, spinach growers use glyphosate. It's used in the orange groves in Florida. It's used in vineyards. Now, of course, they don't spray it directly over those crops, but they're spraying it around the base of the crops to keep them free. And then there are non-GMO crops like wheat and barley and oats, where Monsanto has encouraged farmers to spray this herbicide, like you said, shortly before they're harvested as a desiccant. And the grain is mature, but that kills off the crop, and the farmers can go ahead and harvest it. And what happens is then you see really high residues in foods when you do it that way. So
is a genetically modification of food, in your opinion, and all the research you've done over all these years, is that an issue if it weren't for the, is that a health issue? Do we even know if it weren't for the glyphosates, Roundup stuff?
Well, you know, as again, I've been looking at research, talking to people doing this since 1998.
Wow.
The amount of research showing harm associated with GMOs is really minuscule in comparison to, you know, the research showing harm associated with glyphosate. And for me, that's the profound impact, is it's the combination of the GMO crops with the widespread accelerated herbicide use. Now, there certainly are people who are worried about enhanced allergenicity with GMOs. Mm-hmm. There are people who are worried about, you know, just global conglomerate control of seeds, you know, the patenting of seeds of this life form. There are people that say that GMOs hurt their health, impact their health. And there are a lot of people concerned, obviously, about the lack of transparency because we haven't been labeling foods in this way. But when it comes to direct impact on human health, I believe it's really these residues of these pesticides and the impact on the soil and on the environment.
As you know, there's people out there, you've probably heard of Stephanie Seneff.
Mm-hmm.
We've had her on the show several times, and other folks really on top of this and some of the research. So I'm just wondering, how is all of the awareness of the dangers of glyphosates and what they're doing in the body that Stephanie Seneff and others are talking about. Is anybody even hearing this of people that matter? I mean, other than people that do talk shows like this and people like you, is anybody hearing this research?
Well, I mean, a lot of scientists around the world have been studying glyphosate and glyphosate-based herbicides like Roundup and others. Those are the formulations. You know, we don't really just use glyphosate. It's used in formulations. There are other ingredients that are mixed in. So people are studying that precisely because it's been used so extensively. It's the most widely used agrochemical in the world, the most widely used herbicide in all of history. So you have a number of scientists around the world, elite academics, who've been studying it. And 2-3 years ago, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, this global group of cancer scientists, looked at the research and said, this looks like a probable human carcinogen with direct ties to non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Now, other researchers have found associations with kidney disease, with liver issues, with reproductive problems, cytotoxicity, DNA changes in human cells, and and that's not even talking about the sort of the newer edge of science, which is looking at how it impacts the gut microbiome and if that's affecting our immune system. So there are an array of concerns related to how this impacts our health.
Carrie Gillum is with us, and her latest book is called Whitewash. So has anyone ever stepped up and said, okay, you guys, you know, this is not good. You're killing us, and we're going to sue you? Monsanto.
Well, Monsanto. So currently, right, there are about 4,000 or so people. It's really hard to get a good number. People who are suing Monsanto right now, claiming that they or their loved ones, if their loved ones are deceased, and they're suing on their behalf, develop non-Hodgkin lymphoma specifically through the use of Roundup. And they're saying in their lawsuits that Monsanto knew about the dangers and has hidden the dangers from them and has caused this deadly disease. There's a trial expected. The first trial of all of these cases is scheduled to start on June 18th in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So that will be really interesting.
So talk about that. I know when we set this up, you were telling me that. Did they have something that happened last week that was important? Monsanto keeps trying to dismiss it, right?
Yes, Monsanto has tried to have all of these different lawsuits dismissed. And so far, they really haven't been successful. They also have tried to block discovery, but they've been forced to turn over about 10 million pages of internal, emails and reports and memos and things, looking at, what they've known and done about this for all of the years. And the hearing last week in this Superior Court case was really to look at who could testify, what scientific experts could testify in this trial. And Monsanto is trying to get the scientific experts for the plaintiff, dismissed or blocked from testifying. But it's a man that, is very near death by all accounts, because his body has become so ravaged by disease. They're not sure he'll make it to trial, but Monsanto has been trying to get that trial delayed, and the judges said they're going to go forward. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And how are they going to prove something like that?
Right. How do you ever prove in this world where we're exposed to so many different things and so many contaminants and toxins? And how do you prove that? But these lawyers, they seem to think they have a really strong case. Of course, Monsanto is saying there's no such evidence, and that this chemical in no way causes cancer, is not harmful, and that all of this is, just invalid and based on junk science. And so we shall see.
So, but how do they deal with it when you have these big organizations? What's the name of it? Was it the UN too?
Well, the World Health Organization, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, is part of the World Health Organization.
Okay. And they're the ones that said that it was a carcinogen.
Probable human carcinogen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've talked to a lot of farmers over the years, probably many, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, I could just imagine how many. I mean, do they even get or understand or have a clue of what's going on with the dangers of this stuff?
Well, you know, it's different. It depends on who you're talking to. If you're talking to farmers who are sick, or their neighbors are sick, or their wife, you know, yeah, they have an appreciation for this. If you're talking to a farmer who's used it for 20 years and doesn't have a problem, mm-hmm. not so much. Mm-hmm. But one thing that farmers, even if they're not worried about the health impacts, you know, it's not working as well. They know about the weed resistance. You know, I had one farmer in my book who I talked to. He's not very worried about the health impacts, but he says, you know, it's not working like it used to.
They got to keep doing more and more.
Yeah, yeah. You know, which costs a lot of money, and it's hard on the soil, and it's this pesticide-dependent treadmill, this pesticide-dependent food production system that's been encouraged by Monsanto and these other big chemical companies. It's just not sustainable. It's not healthy for people, but it's also not sustainable, not healthy for the environment. So
the basic idea was they would say, we're going to genetically modify corn, and then we're going to give you this Roundup that's going to allow you to spray enough of it to kill weeds and not the corn. Is that the basic thing that was sold?
Yeah.
That's the basic idea. Wow.
That's the technology that it'll really wipe out the weeds, or right. did, you know, yeah. before resistance. But the crop will be impervious to it. The crop will survive and flourish. And it made it a lot easier for farmers. Farmers before that really had to be strategic in their fields. They rotated their crops. They used cover crops. Mm-hmm. They mixed up the herbicides, you know, in different ways. They would use them at different times in different ways. Or maybe they didn't use herbicides at all, you know. But when the Roundup Ready system came in, and you could just plant a crop and just spray right over the top of it they loved it.
Well, is it any wonder, though, that the nutrients in the soil, I mean, the cover crops and the rotation, as you know, that's all critical to get all the different minerals. And now Stephanie Sinet talks about how it screwed up the whole sulfur cycle in the soils, and sulfur, the detox mineral kind of thing. And it's really dangerous. I mean, so I guess the farmers didn't get that part.
Yeah, I mean, the soil scientist, again, like the weed scientist, you know, warned about this, and they've been tracking it and tracking soil health, and found that, yeah, we've just decimated the nutrient base in our soil, and really undone the delicate balance of healthy soil microbes, you know, that are necessary for healthy crops and nutritious food that we all eat.
Yeah, we've learned that you got to have the microbes in there to make the whole thing available, all right, all the minerals to the roots and all that. So I would suspect, I mean, I'm just speculating, but, you know, soybeans or corn or something, or sugar beets, the GMO stuff, there can't be a whole lot going on nutritionally with that. And they're feeding it to animals too now. I mean, just all this GMO corn and soy. Wow, all the cows, right? Man.
Well, of course. I mean, it's a huge component in livestock feed, our corn and soy that we grow in this country.
Yeah.
And most of it, more than 90% of it now, is this GMO that's sprayed with glyphosate.
And I guess, is there any research, or have you even gone down that dark road of saying, well, what's it do to the meat that I might eat if I'm just doing a commercial cow or something like that? We've done some shows on it, but... probably all another area of research, I suppose.
Right. I mean, we know that our regulators fully expect residues of this pesticide to be in the meat that we consume from these animals. We know that they expect that it persists in the flesh of the animals because, again, they're eating it, they're consuming it. Glyphosate's commonly found in surface waters, and so we know that we're drinking glyphosate usually in our water. And it's, you know, emitted through manure, so it's used as fertilizer as well, sometimes even fertilizer on organic fields. So as I said, I mean, it really has become just ubiquitous: air, water, soil, food, and in our own bodies.
Hmm. Carrie Gillum is with us. If you'd like to be on the show, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We'll give you our website, and also the book is Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. And we'll dig into some more things, and let's do this a little.
Previously with Daniel Vitalis, we were talking about, pine pollen.
Pollen is essentially the equivalent of what an animal would have as sperm. Pollen is like the male part, the semen, and it fertilizes the ovum of the flower, which becomes eventually a fruit. And so if we were going to draw the equivalence, it would be like that the flower is like the female sex organ and the pollen is like the male sexual ejaculate. Well, pine trees, which sort of just dominate so much of the landscape of North America and so much of the world, pine trees, their semen, they dust the landscape in pollen. And that pollen, being the sort of male part of the plant, has some correspondences to male physiology in our species and many other animal species. So what I'm saying is pine pollen contains all of these different anabolic or androgenic hormones, plant versions of hormones that we need, like testosterone, like DHEA.
Well, the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees, good stuff, guys, and few girls, too. Several choices of pine pollen, any Sir Thrival link, oneradionetwork.com. Brian Clement, who heads up the Hippocrates Institute in Florida, talked about saunas here. Elke writes in for Brian Clements. Would Brian give us some tips on what supplements we would need to take if we do saunas several times a week to replenish lost minerals from sweating?
Well, Dr. Rao, who you had on, is a colleague and a friend. We do often conferences together in Europe. And I agree. We have saunas here. I take a sauna, so you know this, no matter where I travel in the world, 365 days a year. I think it's mandatory.
Really?
87%, listen closely, okay. 87% more heavy metals and chemicals come out in an infrared.
Well, no wonder we feel better when we take these saunas.
No wonder we do. And we give you a really nice deal on one, too. Just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. There was a big study that just came out just about a month ago, and it was one of the few long-term studies. They did a 15-year follow-up study, people taking saunas 4 to 7 times a week. They were 61% less likely to suffer a stroke than those taking a sauna once a week. It's pretty wild, isn't it? Findings are based on population, ischemic heart risk factor, and all this geeky stuff, but the more frequently saunas were taken, the lower the risk of stroke. Compared to people taking one sauna per week, the risk was decreased by 14% among those with 2 to 3 sessions and 61% that did saunas 4 to 7 times a week. This little sauna is really great. It's an individual sauna. Your head is sticking out. There's extremely low EMFs. It is made in Taiwan, a medical university. It's won about 3 or 4 awards, and it generally sells for $11.95 retail. A delivered contiguous United States, and if you email me, I'll get you one for $9.95 delivered. They don't allow us to put that in print, but we can just do it orally here, and we can do that. So if you'd like to get one, and we ship them all over the world, and we can do that for a couple $100 extra. You'll get it if you live in Australia or Europe, Canada, and Canada's only $100 extra, and you get the plug that works for you. Because you'll blow these things out if you use the wrong plug. So don't do that. Make sure you let us know what kind of plug voltage you have. You know, the 220 thing they have in Europe. But we get it all comes ready to go. And you just plug it in. And it's pretty amazing. Really, really nice units. I use mine virtually every day of my life. Boy, so you get the healing effects, you know, of the far infrared rays. And also, then you get the sweating. You know, so it's a really... two-banger thing. So just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Should have played this with Dr. Broderick last hour, but we'll do just a little bit of this because the little ones, I tell you what, they're being affected by this glyphosate too, I think.
Bless the beast and the children, for in this world they have no goal.
Kerry Gillum is with us. Her latest book is called Whitewash, the story of weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. So Kerry Gillum, this is a big class action lawsuit. It's based in California. Is that right?
Well, there are many lawsuits filed around the country, several hundred of them, about 409 at my last count.
Really?
Were consolidated in multi-district litigation in federal court in San Francisco. Now, there are many others that are filed in state courts, and the first trial will actually be in San Francisco Superior Court. So
this is the really first time that people have been able to bring them to trial.
Right.
Wow, yeah. Man.
Next month.
And how long have they, the Monsanto attorneys, been stalling this one, this particular case?
Well, this case was filed, I'd have to go back and look. It was 2016. I feel like it was January 2016.
That's only 2 years. They're almost at trial, right?
I have to go back and check. But yeah, they set this back in August of last year, this trial date. So we shall see. It'll be very interesting to cover it. I hope to be out there for the opening statements.
Yeah, wow. And who's paying all the attorneys who are doing the prosecuting?
So the plaintiff's attorneys, you know, they finance their own deal. The plaintiffs don't pay anything. These plaintiff's attorneys, this is how it works these days. You know, they take out loans. There are hedge funds, Wall Street investors that finance this. They have capital that they put into these things. So they seem to think they have strong cases. We shall see.
So have you been to some of the pre-trial things out there in California?
Yeah, I went to a really interesting several days of what were referred to as Daubert hearings or Science Week, and this was in the federal jurisdiction. And this was where each side presented their best scientific experts. Monsanto put theirs up, and the plaintiffs put theirs up, and really chewed on, you know, the cancer science and the evidence that it does or does not cause cancer. And that was fascinating to sit there and watch that.
I bet. Wow. How can you have that scientist with that much opposing views? I mean, something's not even right with that, right? If you're a scientist.
Well, you know,
you know what I'm saying?
This is the big discussion, right? I mean, whose science do we believe now? You know, these people all have very elite credentials, mm-hmm. and they can be so divided over what the science actually shows us. And that's part of what I go into in my book. I call it the corruption of science. Science has been manipulated and influenced and corrupted. You know, we see papers that are published in peer-reviewed journals seemingly coming from independent scientists, and then we find out that a corporation has actually had a hand in writing it or editing it or drafting it and paying those people to put this stuff out there. And, you know, it's a hard thing to try to discern the truth these days, I think.
Right. On this Science Week where they had all this science stuff, was there a jury there at that point?
No, this is just for the judge to determine.
So what kind of stuff is he thinking about when he hears this? I'm really curious about that. What they can present to the jury?
The judge is supposed to decide if these experts, you know, are indeed experts and not quacks, who can then present testimony to a jury when it eventually gets to that point.
Oh, I see.
So, but it was, you know, as I said, fascinating stuff. And he's been the judge in this federal case, Judge Chabria. He's hammered on both sides, but in particular with Monsanto and ghostwriting, this term has come up because these documents have come out from inside Monsanto where they talk about ghostwriting scientific papers and review papers. And the judge is, you know, Monsanto said, "Oh, don't pay attention to that. We didn't really mean it that way. Don't worry about it." And the judge is like, "No, we're gonna dig into this a little bit."
So. Oh, so are they able to prove that these corporations, and I guess it goes on, you know, industry-wide in all venues where the corporation themselves, they write the paper and then a scientist just signs off on it?
That's what we've seen come out of these internal documents from Monsanto, where they talk about, you know, we're gonna pay these guys to edit and sign their names, and we'll do most of the work. We'll do most of the writing.
Really? They actually found documents proving that Monsanto did that?
That's Monsanto's own words. That's Monsanto's term is ghostwriting. Ghostwriting, ghostwritten. One scientist in his performance review kind of touts that he ghost wrote a recent research paper that regulators, you know, relied on to some extent. So, yeah, there are many examples of it that have come out in these internal documents.
But, I mean, is it really possible if a jury would find that glyphosates do cause cancer and give some kind of a judgment? I guess it would be a big judgment to a lot of people that are involved in this. It would be like the end of glyphosate?
Well, you don't know. And again, in the litigation, they're specifically alleging that Roundup, that particular product.
Right. The Roundup.
Because right. gave them non-Hodgkin lymphoma. But glyphosate really is, you know, there's a lot of global debate, specifically in Europe. European Parliament voted in October to ban glyphosate.
Wow. Now,
the full European Commission has given it another 5 years, relicensed it after extensive debate. But Germany has said they want to restrict it. Paris, France has said that they want to ban it. It really is getting a lot of attention from people who are concerned.
So this trial is mostly about Roundup and not glyphosate per se, right?
Well, yes, because Monsanto patented and introduced glyphosate to the world, it is now off patent.
Okay.
And it's used in, you know, formulations by different companies, different types of formulations. But Roundup specifically is what these plaintiffs are suing, and it's why they're suing Monsanto, because it's Monsanto's product. But, you know, these formulations, and that's another thing. I just wrote about this in The Guardian last week. These formulations are not extensively tested by our regulators. So glyphosate, you know, our regulators require a lot of testing by the companies on that to prove that it's safe or to show that it's reasonably safe to be used in the environment. But they don't on the formulations, which just seems crazy because, of course, the formulations are what are sprayed on our food and what you buy and spray on your lawn. And they've only just now, our National Toxicology Program only has just now started testing formulations to right. see how safe they are.
So what is the FDA and the EPA and the USDA? I mean, what's going on there? Get a big picture of, you know, this whole Monsanto thing, and they got to know what's going on, or they got to sense it anyway. I mean, they're not brain dead.
Well, so the EPA is the primary regulator for glyphosate and for these pesticide products, and they say that glyphosate, they recently came out with a risk assessment and said it looks like glyphosate does not cause cancer, is
really?
Not likely to cause cancer, directly contradicting the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Now, many people, and I have evidence in my book, many people say that, well, Monsanto has heavy influence over the EPA, and you do see quite a bit of that through the internal documents that have come out and through Freedom of Information documents that I've gotten. There are some very tight and close and cozy relationships there between the EPA and Monsanto, and many different examples of that. Now, our FDA and our USDA are supposed to test foods every year for residues of pesticides, and they have skipped, for the most part, testing for glyphosate for decades.
Really?
Which would seem odd, considered how widely used it is on food crops. So only now has the FDA started, because of so much pressure and because of this probable carcinogenicity classification from IARC, have they started trying to test some foods for residues. I did a story about that, too, a couple of weeks ago. Got some new documents from inside the FDA that one scientist was trying to find food that didn't have glyphosate in it and said, you know, it was almost impossible. He brought all this food from home, crackers and granola and things, and he said he found glyphosate in all of it. The only thing he couldn't find glyphosate in was broccoli, he said.
Really? So they're finding glyphosate. Every time I see a list of all the different foods that are tested with glyphosate, the list just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Well, consumer groups, right, without our government doing the testing like they're supposed to do, a number of consumer groups have been testing these last several years, and they found it in cereal and crackers and, you know, soy-based infant formula and oatmeal products. And academics have been testing and found it in flour and bread products. And then these new tests by the FDA have found it in honey, oatmeal, you know, corn and soy. They found it as an illegal level in corn recently, according to the documents. So again, I mean, it just reaffirms what we know, that this is a pretty persistent and prevalent pesticide in our lives. Hmm.
So it must be coming in from all sorts of different places, the water, and I guess even in the rain. And
yeah, our U.S. Geological Survey a few years ago looked for it and issued a report, and the glyphosate was, you know, pretty commonly found in our waterways, you know, that feed into our drinking water system. It's very common and persists in the soil. They find it sometimes in rainwater. So
how many pounds did you say in the United States, glyphosate?
Close to 300 million, gone from about 40 million to close to 300 million.
Wow. Man, that's a lot.
Well, there's over a billion pounds of pesticides used in the United States every year. You know, we have insecticides and fungicides and these weed killers. When I talk to people, I'm going to Houston tomorrow, actually, to speak to people about my research and my findings. And, you know, it's a pesticide-dependent food system that we have, developed here in America, and that we're a handful of companies are pushing around the world. You know, we really are four, five, or six now. They keep consolidating, powerful corporations, and they're making billions of dollars a year in pushing this pesticide-dependent food system. And, you know, we're all buying into it, and yet we know, and our science shows us and tells us, that pesticides contribute to a range of illness and disease, neurodevelopmental problems in children, and cancers, including this non-Hodgkin lymphoma. It's not just glyphosate. It's chlorpyrifos and atrazine and 2,4-D and dicamba. And, I mean, we're consuming these foods. And the pesticide companies are saying, don't worry about it, it's fine. But a lot of scientists are saying, no, we need to worry about it.
Yeah, it's really amazing that the EPA has gotten so, I don't know, so whatever, to not even really look at this. I mean, carefully? How could you just ignore all the science that's out there and the lawsuits and all that? I mean, it seems pretty strange to me that it's even going on that level.
Well, it's been going on for years. This is the push-pull in Washington. You know, you have money and wealth and power and lobbying. And so you have our, you know, appointed heads of our regulatory agencies who are pushed and pulled by political agendas. But then you have the working grunts, the scientists within these agencies, who are most of them just trying to do their job and do good science to protect the public. But there's a clash there, you know, between the political agenda of the wealthy and powerful corporations and others, and the public scientists trying to protect public health. It's a conflict, and it's been demonstrated and documented through multiple administrations. It's certainly not a partisan issue any means.
But a listener sent me a video of this story down in Argentina with tobacco and glyphosate. Have you seen that one?
Well, I'm not sure what you're talking about. I know there are a number of Argentina farm workers who sued and tried to bring a case because they were alleging birth defects in their children from their exposure on tobacco plantations to applying Roundup and glyphosate-based herbicides.
Yeah. We're gonna post the video, but it was an incredible story where they're evidently the agribusiness people sent people that posed as attorneys that wanted to help the people, and they made them sign non-disclosure agreements so they wouldn't say anything, right? You can't say anything because, you know, then we won't have a case and all of that. And then they would just do this, and then the people wouldn't talk, and years go by and they never hear from them again, you know. So of course, some really weird things going on,
right? Well, I know those Argentine farmers have had a very hard time trying to bring a case, but I didn't know about the non-disclosures. That would be interesting to see about.
Here's an email for you. Is there any evidence that glyphosates cause arthritis. And can you explain the shikimate pathway that I've heard glyphosate interrupts, but I don't know what that is. Are you that geeky? Do you know that, Carrie? How geeky are you?
Well, I do talk about it in my book. There's a group of us called Glyphosate Geeks. But yeah, the shikimate pathway, it's basically the way glyphosate works is it interferes with that. It's a metabolic route, and plants need it to, you know, create these aromatic amino acids, these things that they need basically to survive. And glyphosate interrupts that, essentially. And so the plant, you know, can't do what it needs to do in a layman's version and will die. And the idea behind glyphosate was that this shikimate pathway does not exist in mammals or in animals or humans, so that we would not be hurt if we were exposed to this chemical.
Oh.
But what people are finding, certain scientists are finding or revealing, I guess, is that the bacteria that exists in our gut does have this type of pathway. And so the theory of investigation now is that glyphosate can interfere with that in the bacteria in our gut. And we need, you know, healthy bacteria in our gut to be healthy. So there's that very big concern, and that then could manifest itself in different problems throughout the body.
Well, you are a glyphosate geek. Good for you.
Well.
Yeah, well, as you know, when the bacteria is disrupted in the gut and other places, nothing works, right? I mean, yeah.
That's an easier way to say it.
Nothing works. Yeah, the whole immune system, I think, what is it, 80% or something is in the gut? And wow. So that's the work that I think the Stephanie Seneffs of the world are doing, right?
Right. Yeah. And other scientists as well. And actually, there is some litigation now against Monsanto that brings that to the fore. That is, you know, using that theory, and it's going forward so far.
So overall, you're seeing a little more. Must feel a little more awareness in the courts to hear these things and to not let them get quashed by a team of attorneys.
Yeah, I mean, that has been fascinating to watch, that these have moved forward this way and that they have been able to generate discovery that has opened up, you know, just really some revelatory findings to be able to see within this giant corporation and see how they communicate to regulators and to scientists, you know, and how they try to influence regulators, how they try to alter the assessments of science. It's really, really eye-opening to see what's been going on.
What Carrie's talking about, because I watched Law and Order, so I know this stuff, is that what they try to do generally is just have a case dismissed because there's no evidence, right? And so if they let it go further and the judge says, no, there's a case here, then they can do discovery and they can ask for all kinds of stuff, right? And they have to give it to them. Right? They have to give it to them.
And what they've done in this case, there's been some drama.
I bet.
Monsanto wanted to have most of the things that they turned over be sealed so that the public would not have, you know, be able to read these documents. And the plaintiff's attorneys fought back on that and said, no, you know, the public has a right to see all of this. So there's been that fight, and the judge has really kind of come down on the side of transparency and said, you know, unless there's secret business, you know, something having to do with material secret business operations, you know, we're going to let the public get a gander at this. So we've been seeing a lot of internal Monsanto information that the company really doesn't want out there.
Mm-hmm. Let's take this call. Okay, on the phone, good morning. Who's this?
It's Doc.
Oh, Doc, who was just on the show. Did you want to say something to Carrie?
I would.
Go ahead.
I would. Hey, Carrie.
Hi, Doc.
I got your. This is Jeff Roderick. I'm the veterinarian that was on there before.
Right.
Before you, and there's a couple of things here. The microbiome thing is the bottom line to the whole deal of killing the immune system, and that's how you get the lymphoma and all these other diseases, because it just knocks out everything.
So that's where what's happening in the gut, you're saying. Like she was talking.
The big thing is, and I love the article. I love the article in the Guardian, and that was really, really great.
We get it. What he's saying is,
there. Just on the cats and dogs, I had never thought about pets before. I guess my work has been focused on, you know, human health and the environment generally. But I have been talking recently with some people who are starting to test pet urine, you know, just like we've been sampling human urine for this weed killer. They are trying to now compile a database of pet urine to see what levels of this weed killer are showing up in animals. Because, of course, they're eating pet food.
Most of their eating is non-organic pet food. So we were talking about that before with Doc Broderick, that, there's no telling what's going on with the pets, too. With the glyphosates, but there are people that are beginning, that you're seeing, are looking at that, and are they finding the glyphosates residues in the pet urine?
They are just starting their work right now, so I don't know the results of that.
Couple more things here before we go. Let's see, another email. I heard the patent is up on Roundup, so now there are generic versions out there. Is that true? Writes Julie.
Well, glyphosate is the active ingredient, and the patent on that, you know, the patents are different in different countries. The patent, the main patent here in the United States expired in the year 2000. But in terms of products, like branded products and Roundup, those are, you know, particular to each company, and they have their own formulations, and they're constantly sort of tinkering with those and changing them, and they're different based on different geographies and different types of use. Monsanto, I don't even know how many different types of Roundup brands they have, but many, many, many.
What's going on, big picture agribusiness, with places like Japan, China, Russia, taking this soybean, the soybeans and the sugar beets and the corn, the GMO stuff, are they getting pushback? The farmers finding places that don't want this stuff?
Well, in terms of GMOs, yes. I mean, you know, much of Europe has resisted GMOs, and really most countries over there don't allow the cultivation, the planting of genetically engineered crops. It's something that they've never felt good about or wanted. There are a number of countries like that around the world. If you look on a data sheet, which comes out every year, the United States has always been and still is the main adopter, the main user. U.S. farmers are the main ones who are planting these types of crops. Now, South America is also pretty large with the genetically engineered corn and soybeans. And then after that, it really, tails off in terms of the planting. But the chemicals, glyphosate is widely used. It's widely used throughout Europe and around the world.
Are you aware of any deals that Monsanto or other agri people have paid to people to not sue? Of course, they'd probably get a non-disclosure, so you wouldn't know.
Over Roundup particular?
Yeah, over Roundup or glyphosates or any of this stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm not aware of that. And none of the attorneys that I've talked to are aware of any type of settlement offers or anything like that at this point. I think if you are doing that, you know, there's a potential floodgate that would open. But I'm not sure if anybody knows of anything. I'd love to hear about it.
Of course, like I said, you probably wouldn't know. You know, if you do that, they probably don't let you say anything. They'll do a non-disclosure thing. Well, boy, the beat just... So are you encouraged after looking at this for 20 years that... someday more awareness in this country is going to be of you know, the Roundup glyphosate thing?
I'm encouraged that people are reading the book and asking me to be on their radio show. Frankly, you know, when the publisher came to me and said, do you want to write a book about all this stuff you've been researching? I said, gosh, no, nobody's going to read a book about pesticides for crying out loud, but people are, people care, and you know, they're getting engaged and informed, and there's a big deal in Europe, and I think in the United States, people are saying, gosh, you know, we were worried about GMOs, but now we're really worried about pesticides in our foods, and we need to protect our health and protect our kids and protect the environment. So I think it's heartening that people like you and others are talking about it and doing something.
Do it again. And plus, Paul, you start getting moms becoming aware that the food they're giving their kids are hurting them. Phew, watch out. They're gonna stay on it. You know, they're gonna stay on it. Ooh, yeah. And are we finding the glyphosate stuff in organic certified foods too?
Not so much. I mean, you do see it in organic. I mean, this FDA chemist who pulled honey samples, he found it in organic honey. Some of these consumer groups are saying they're finding it in some organic foods that they're sampling. But again, because our regulators, our USDA and our FDA, every year they put out this giant, I just got mine in the mail again, and you can look at it online, giant books looking at all the pesticide data in our food, you know, tracking it and the levels and where it's found and the most pervasive, and they've skipped glyphosate. So really having a good, you know, decades worth of data, we don't have that on glyphosate. Hmm.
Any take on this new EPA guy that President Trump appointed? What's his name? Yeah, it's probably not going to be too good with this kind of stuff, is it?
Well, so... No, I mean, probably I don't not. Know. Yeah. He seems to be embroiled in so many different investigations and scandals right now, Scott Pruitt. But
he's got his own problems. Jeez.
He's got a lot of problems. One thing that's going on with the EPA, though, is chlorpyrifos, which is Dow Chemical, which is a very popular insecticide, which is known to be neurodevelopmentally damaging to young children, banned from household use because it's so dangerous. It's the fourth most prevalent pesticide found in our foods right now.
Chlorpyrifos, really?
EPA scientists have said it should be banned from food growing, from agriculture. And the Obama administration planned to ban it. And then this new EPA and the new Trump administration decided to overturn their own EPA scientists and keep this thing on the market.
Oh, that's not good.
So, you know, you ask about the EPA, that's where they're standing right now.
That's not good. Boy, that's bad. So they were going to really get rid of it. And this, what's the brand name for this chlorpyrifos? Is there a brand name that's sold like Roundup?
There are different names. Mm-hmm. Dursban. I think that's how you say it from Dow Chemical. But, you know, again, it's like glyphosate. It's an insecticide and it's an active ingredient. But yeah, Dursban is one of them. Mm-hmm. From Dow.
And as you know, we talked to Dow Broderick last hour, and, you know, the dogs and cats, they go out in the park and everything, and they get this stuff all over their feet, you know, and the city parks, they're spraying all this stuff. And it's a good idea to wash your doggy's feet when they come in or something.
Well, and are your children rolling around in the park, you know, playing touch football or something? I mean,
Boy. Well, we just need to get more awareness, thanks to folks like you. So when are you going to go out, and when's the trial going to start? June 18th?
June 18, unless something happens to, you know, change that. June 18 in San Francisco Superior Court. Be there.
Be there or be square. Wow.
Be there.
Are you going to try to stick around the whole thing? I mean, it could take, how long do you think it's going to go on?
A couple of months, maybe, really? Right? Maybe a month. I don't, you know, quite a while. I can't be there every day, of course, but I'll try to be there for the opening and the closing, I think.
Wow. How many attorneys are on the good side, the good team?
Well, it depends on your perspective. Yeah, Monsanto would say it's plaintiff's attorneys, gosh, you know, again, you could count them up, 50 or 60, I think, all on the list, but the lead attorneys are 10, maybe you could say 10, 12.
Really? They bring those 10 people in court?
Well, gosh, the ones in San Francisco, there were maybe 10 or 15 of them.
And how many does Monsanto bring in? They must have a load.
Oh, Monsanto's good. They got the big guns.
They got the big guns. Wow, man, it'd be fun just to see some of that, wouldn't it?
It's like watching a movie. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very colorful to both sides. Both sides are playing, you know, trying to little dirty tricks here and there, and outsmart the other one, and it's really fun to watch.
That's a shame. Do they video these things? I guess they don't allow that, do they? I'd like to see it.
The judge in federal court for the Science Week, he did. It was videotaped, and it's on the internet, so the public can watch it. As I said, he's really promoting transparency on this.
I'll be darned. So a lot of the trial might be available at some point after it's over, huh?
I don't know, but yeah, transcripts are available. I should point out, I work for a nonprofit group now, U.S. Right to Know, and we have a website a web page where I put up all the court documents and the links to the transcripts and the links to the videos of the court activity. So if you go to usrtk.org, you can find all of that information.
Oh, you are a geek. Good for you. usrtk.org. If you really want to get geeky on this stuff, you can just go look at the court documents, huh?
Exactly.
Well, Miss Gillum, good job. Good job. Good job. Well, I appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I hope you sell a lot of books, and maybe after you really get a good read on the whole trial thing sometime in July or something, you'll come back on and give us an update on what's going on.
Yeah, that would be great. I appreciate it.
Terrific. Her book is called Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, Corruption of Science, Carrie Gillum. You can also check out her website, which, strangely enough, is, carriegillum.com. Very clever. CareyGillam.com. Read more about her. All right, Miss Gillum, thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
See you real soon. Bye. Well, there you have it. Man, wow, what a trip. Be fun to be out there and check that trial out, wouldn't it? Well, we'll stay on top of it for you the best we can. Thanks for your ongoing support. We appreciate your purchasing the products that we promote. We think we got some of the best ever. Again, for Dr. Broderick, he has the only, I think the only 100% organic food that I know of. You know, there may be some others out there, probably not, but his is in cans. And you can go to cornucopiapetfoods.com, and it's got a whole turkey and all kinds of stuff. But if you check out the cat one, it's pretty cool. It's like everything in there is just meat. I mean, just fish, and you know, because he said that's the one that's really important for the cats. We've been looking at this product called C-60.com. And talking with Wayne Blakely, and he's got his own version of Carbon 60 that we'll talk about tomorrow. But he suggests that it really is good for all kinds of chemicals and stuff like this. So I've been trying to find out if this Carbon 60 will really can help the body to detoxify glyphosates and stuff. I know it can do, and I'll talk to Wayne more about it. Once again, he has a different one than the one we're promoting, but who cares? But anyway, we have a little couple-month deal with this one company, and it's called Carbon 60. And if you do C-60.com, use promo code 1RADIO, and you can get yourself some of this. And I mentioned to you before, Doodle and I have been on it for about, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks, and there's something going on with this product. I've given it to a good friend of mine who's 90 revolutions around the sun, and I just brought her another bottle. And she said, I like this. There's something going on. So it's kind of the bomb right now, the whole Carbon 60. And the one that we're promoting in particular, we think that they've got a technology, according to as much as I know. I mean, I'm just believing people at this point. I've not looked at the research. But we think that this Bob Greska's product, C-60.com, could be a really, really good one because of the small particle size. So you might want to check it out and grab a bottle, take it, and see if you don't feel more clarity or just don't feel better. You might just feel better. Doodle and I are taking it. So why not? C-60.com. It's also a little link in our store, I think. Okay. See you tomorrow. And we're going to talk to Wayne Blakely, who's got quite a story to tell about autism and how he helped his son heal from that and where the journey that it took him. And he's got some really cool things we're going to talk about. So that'll be tomorrow, 9 o'clock. See you then.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.